Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Y'all doing okay today? All right. My name is Meredith Collins. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 18th of 2009, and I'm a member of the Came to Believe group of Rocky Mount, North Carolina. We meet on Tuesdays and Fridays, 7 to 8, Rocky Mount St. Paul Methodist Church on Bethlehem Road. If you get a chance, you're in Rocky Mount, come out and see us. We'd love to have you. I am supposed to introduce these fine people today. I'm really excited to be here. I'm a little nervous, but I'm excited to be here. I personally was never in prison. I tried a lot, but I never got the chance. God has blessed me to be able to go back into a facility where I go to Fountain Correctional Facility in Rocky Mount to the Free on the Inside group. I also take a lady out right now to our group, which is really, really cool. I had the pleasure of meeting Patricia in Fountain and have seen her grow since she's come out, and it's really an amazing, amazing thing. But I'm going to shut up so they can do their thing. I've got Todd today, Tony, Patricia, and Tony. It says Terry, but they know him in North Carolina as Tony, is what I've been told. So we're going to start out with Todd, and I'll sit down.
I am an alcoholic. My name is Todd.
Hi, Todd.
My sobriety date is the 7th of July, 2002. I am a member of the Sobriety Beyond group of really serviced alcoholics in Forest City. We meet on Sunday night at 6 o'clock at the Catholic Church. It's 8 o'clock on Thursday night at the same Catholic Church, and Monday night at the Presbyterian Church down the street for a 12 and 12 study. And you are all, of course, welcome to attend. I'm also outside sponsor for the Spindale group of Alcoholics Anonymous, the Foothills group. And it's kind of strange because I was actually a member of that group for over 3 years, being on the other side of the fence as working on my Department of Corrections degree, which I got a master's for. Thank you. So I'm supposed to, I think, share basically that this is much better than life in a prison cell. And I just want to say that I'm supposed to share like my experience, strength, and hope as far as, you know, I've read and heard and seen stories about jails, institutions, and death. I can say that jails, you can check with Florida Department of Corrections, federal prison, and North Carolina, and they'll all designate the fact that I have visited all of them. So I have plenty of experience in all of those avenues. Institutions, in 1996, I decided that I did not want to go back to prison and decided that the best avenue was going to be just to kill myself, which, thank goodness, God has more control over my life than I do. And after 3 attempts, I still ended up back in prison, but in the psych ward at Central Prison, and I spent 7 months there under evaluation to see if I was going to continue to do that, which, thank goodness, I guess, you know, God had more control in my life than I thought. In March of 2002, I went back into working on my master's degree and had no inclination that I was going to do anything different whatsoever. I went into prison and, you know, I'm very much like Dwight. I had absolutely fabulous enabling parents who always made sure that I had anything I ever wanted, and I demanded everything I ever wanted. So as far as, you know, I went into prison, I always had money so I could purchase pills, whatever was available, I got. So I went in March of 2002 and was doing my same thing. And I'd been to treatment. My family had sent me to treatment before. This was already my 4th time in prison, so you would think that somewhere along that line, as brilliant as I was, that I would be able to figure that out. But it just didn't, you know, it never made sense. in July, I don't know exactly what happened, but I it's sort of like what Bill had. I sort of had that, like, that moment of clarity where I could actually start seeing some type of a connection to where if I kept doing what I was doing, that was where I was going to actually be for the rest of my life, or I was going to try my other avenue, which was just to kill myself, because neither one of those roads right there was going to succeed. And so I chose to go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Now, I'd already been to treatment. I'd already been through things. It's funny, when I walked in the door, I saw BJ. I mean, we did time together in Nash for forever ago. And so we've been together. He don't remember, but I do. And it's so it's so funny to look around this room. I mean, some of you were people who watched over me when I was in prison, and some of you I was like roommates with in prison. So it was, this is like right where I need to be. And I'm truly grateful to be here. You know, I continued being involved with Alcoholics Anonymous, and very much like what Tom was saying, I knew that service work and involvement with Alcoholics Anonymous was the only way that I was not going to continue doing what I was doing. And I'm still nervous. You would think, because I love to talk. But I was hoping not this many people would still be here this morning. So I just got really involved. And as a direct result, you know, it's amazing that by doing the next right thing, outrageous things started happening, even in prison. You know, I actually was freer inside prison than I was outside, because when I was outside, I was trying to do everything my way. Everything, I was so selfish and self-centered, you know, demanding. Nothing was ever right until it was my way, and then it wasn't even right because I'd want to change it a little bit. So, but it was amazing having that freedom inside prison. And I mean, if you've never been to prison, it's a very, you know, whatever. I don't want to go back on that avenue, but I go back regularly in this avenue, which is I'm so grateful to be able to do it. But anyway, so I got real involved when I got to, you know, time. Everything in prison is time framing. Like, when you get to so many things, you can go to minimum custody. When you get to so many years, you can get passes. When you get to so many years, you can get work release. Every single thing that could happen happened, and it was just a direct result of my higher power controlling me and being able to do what he put in my path, because, again, I'm real selfish and self-centered, and sometimes something would be directed, and I'd be like, I just sometimes don't want to go there. But anyway, so as soon as I got to minimum custody, I started taking passes, and one of the first things I wanted to do was get involved with outside meetings, and which luckily I was able to do. And I got an outside sponsor, and I went to meetings regularly, the same meetings that, where I'm now a home group member, and got real involved. Even in prison, I got real involved. And for a while, my last year, I was actually secretary, and I was in prison, but I was still secretary. And then it just kept rotating. It's just so important. As it's turned out, I got out August of 2010, so it'd be almost 2 years, which is, my will would have probably had me back in prison, because 2 years is a very long period of time for me to ever stay out of prison, because, you know, my self-will, I'm selfish and self-centered, and I would usually end up right back in. But because I'm really involved with Alcoholics Anonymous, outrageous things happen. You know, service, I totally believe in the three legacies that service is, like, for me, the most important thing. Since I've been out, I'm just rotated in. I'm actually DCM for District 15, Area 51, which is just amazing to have that, you know, sort of responsibility for my district. And it's funny that being this involved, I try to tell guys, even I go to the prison. I can only go on Sunday, on Wednesday night. I used to go Sunday, but I can only go on Wednesday night out to the prison. And it's so wild because last year in November, I got my blue card, which is I could just go inside prisons, which is here is the prison that for a long time I was trying to get out of. Now I have a pass where I can actually go into and leave regularly, which is, you know, that's a blessing. When I get to that gate and they're like, oh, okay, we'll let you out. So believe me, that's nice when they say, okay, we'll be right with you, instead of like, can I go? And then last week I actually got my orange card where now I can actually start taking guys out. And last week I took a guy out for an outside meeting, which for me, that's like the full circle. And that only has happened because I'm right in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, it might sound crazy, but for me, you know, it's like everything, my life is like a big pie because I love to eat, unless you can't tell that. But I mean, but I have been in sort of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I've been like right on the edge, only because I knew that I wanted things to be different, but didn't want to do anything different. So stopping drinking was part of the thing, but I didn't want to do anything else. So I didn't really do anything. I didn't work the steps and get sponsored, didn't do anything. I was just kind of like held on until I just let go and off I'd go. Now, being right in the middle of the pie, you know, it's awful hard to get flown off the pie if I'm right in the middle, because I got a long way to go before I get to the edge, you know. And now, you know, my phone is like full of people that I can call anytime, you know. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I call them every day. So if any point, you know, I just feel like I'm getting right to the edge, or, you know, my character defects take off, which they, you know, I mean, they do, you know, sometimes I'm a little selfish. And it's just real important for me to stay right in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, in 1996, I tried to kill myself because I thought that was the end of the road. Now, for me, I know that every day, one day at a time, it's part of my signature on my thing, O-D-A-A-T, that's one day at a time, I focus on today. Today is just a blessing. Yesterday was a gift, and tomorrow may not ever happen, but all I need to do right now is just focus on today. For me, I need to stay active in Alcoholics Anonymous, I need to be able to help others, and to share my story whenever I need to. When Dean asked me a few weeks ago if I'd, whenever it was, if I'd come and share something real quick this morning, I'd be like, but I have to work Sunday. He's like, well, you know, we can work it out and you can get into, and anyway, as it's turned out, you know, the rotation for my life has been positive, positive, positive. I was on work release for a while, and for 3 years I stayed at the same job. I got out of prison, I stayed at that same job for a while. Now, as it turns out, I actually work in a drug treatment center, which is, I mean, it's, you know, it's amazing. I'm trying to stay focused on, it sure beats sitting in a cell, which, I mean, root canal is better than sitting in a cell. I mean, you know, I mean, anything at all beats sitting in a dang cell. I mean, it's just outrageous. So all I can say is that I'm so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know that now, you know, service work is real important. I know that when I rotate out of my cycle of being or DCM, I'm definitely going to concentrate more towards corrections, because for me, this is what really gave me back my life. And I can't say necessarily that gave me back my life too much, because my life was so selfish and self-centered, and I don't want any part of that life again. That life, July, I'll be 10 years ago that I really gave up that life. And I've prospered into the person that I am today. And when I got my job at where I work at this treatment center, and I did all these applications and all this panels and all this stuff, and at the very end, I said, I thought that my history was going to stop me from getting the job. And my boss just looked at me and said, Todd, your history is what got you the job. And I was like, okay, cool. So I know I'm kind of skipping all over the place because I don't want to take too much time. And there's no way in the world, like a friend from Texas, there's no way in the world I'd get up here and tell my story in 12 minutes. We'd be here for like 3 hours. And I have to get to work. But I just say that I am so grateful to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and to be involved in corrections. I'm just amazed that Department of Corrections gives me a damn pass that I can go to prison and get someone out and take them out for 5 hours. That is just amazing, you know, and that only happens because my higher power, I choose to call God, is real involved in my life. I have a whole routine I do every morning. I get up, I read a couple meditations, I take some quiet time, and I listen, you know. And that was real important for me because I'd pray for all kinds of things, you know, but then I'd never listen. You know, I'd just say, get, you know, blah, 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 and then off I'd go. Well, now I do some meditations and I do some prayer and then I'd just be quiet so that I can actually hear what and hear his direction. And it's been nothing but something positive. And I'm so grateful to be here. And all I can say is that the next year deal thingamajig, you know, I'll be involved. I'm going to keep in touch with Dean because I really think that corrections is where God is pulling me to. And so, thanks.
Oh, well, thank you. Hey, my name's Tony, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
thanks, Todd. You didn't leave me but a couple minutes, so make it short and sweet. My sobriety date is 2007, November the 11th. By the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous and North Carolina Department of Corrections, I got sober. I know the importance today of the corrections work that the people from the outside do because they saved my life. You know, in 1987 was my first stint in the North Carolina Department of Corrections. But I'd already had a lot of experience in jails and institutions since the age of 13. So I got a lot of people beat with that experience. You know, since I was 13 years old, I've been going in and out of jails and institutions constantly all my life. But the day I walked into the North Carolina Department of Corrections, and I think it was March the 7th of 2008, I had already made a decision to change my life because of the message that was given to me all them other years. Now, I never listened to none of you folks when you came into that prison system and told me that I was an alcoholic and that I needed to change my life. As a matter of fact, I remember this old man in 87 told me out the gate, he said, son, if you'll change your life and work this program, you'll never have to come back in here again. Well, I didn't believe him because I didn't believe I was an alcoholic. Matter of fact, when I walked in the Department of Corrections in November, March 7th of 2008, I actually started in Narcotics Anonymous. I had the biggest resentments against Alcoholics Anonymous that I was no way in hell going to this program. Well, I didn't realize y'all tricked me and had another program just like yours. And I was so grateful for the men in the Department of Corrections that had been working with outside sponsors before I got there. I also went to Wayne Correctional, where Dean Coley goes to. I've been seeing Dean there for years. I've been Wayne Correctional more times than they can count. But the sponsorship that came in there gave such a strong message that they gave it to me when I got there. And when I received that message, I knew right out the gate, they told me, when you get out of prison, you need to make sure you get involved in service work. Well, you know, I wanted to get service work, and I wanted to get back involved in the prisons and the jails and institutions because that's where I came from. And I knew that the God of my understanding wanted me to get involved in that because I have a great message for them because I've been there. I've done that, and I know what they're going through. And when Tom was talking the other day about the legacies of recovery, unity, and service, you know, they instilled that upon me in the Department of Corrections this time around. I spent 3 years in there of working a program of recovery to the best of my ability, and I struggled like hell. But every time I went to another prison, I'd see another familiar face. And that's what gave me the hope and the strength to do what I'm doing today. When my sponsor called me up and told me I was going to be speaking on this panel, I thought, well, what the hell? I mean, I've only been out of prison 9 months. Am I ready for something like that? And he didn't have to remind me how ready I was because of the experience I've had since the age of 13. You know, I've been going in and out of these jails and institutions and drinking. I've lost families. I've lost a lot of things. But today I'm gaining a lot of things back that I never thought possible. I never thought I would be standing in front of a bunch of drunks telling them that I'm grateful for y'all being in my life. You know, I would have never dreamed this to be imaginable. So I know that that legacy of service is very important. The day I walked out of prison, it wasn't 3 days later, I went and got involved in some institutional work and volunteer work. That's how important it was to me. I knew I couldn't get in the jails, and I knew I couldn't get in the prisons immediately. But I did get involved exactly like they told me to do. My whole life has changed. I have a driver's license today, thanks to this program. I take people to meetings on a regular basis, because if they don't make it, I don't make it. And if y'all wouldn't have been here to make it, I wouldn't have made it. I'm very grateful for y'all to be here today. I'm grateful for Dean, Jerry, Tom. I've heard that name for the last 20 years in the Department of Corrections. And I got to meet him. You know, I got to meet that fine man. I got to meet that man at an anniversary down in Fayetteville, North Carolina, where I'm actually from. And it was important for me to see him and hear his story, because I'm just like him, you know. I'm just like him. If it wasn't for y'all carrying the message, I wouldn't be here. And I want to thank you for that.
Hi. You'll have to excuse my voice. My name's Patricia Dyer, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Patricia.
I am also a member of the Came to Believe group in Rocky Mount, and my sobriety date is January 13th, 2011. Coincidentally, January 13th, 2011 is the day that the Honorable Judge Monica Leslie sentenced me to 18 months, no more, no less, in prison. I just want to tell you a little bit about where I was before I got into prison. I was absolutely miserable, completely miserable. I hated myself. I hated everyone around me, because it was everyone's fault that I was the way that I was. No one cared about me. I just wanted to shrivel up and die, and that was my prayer. You know, I couldn't go a day without alcohol. I still didn't realize I was an alcoholic. I drank because my life was bad. You know, if people only knew what I was going through, they would understand why I drank. Being an alcoholic was something I used as an excuse to drink. You know, people would be like, "What's wrong with you, gal?" "I'm an alcoholic." You know, but I didn't believe it. For the life of me, I didn't believe it. And I had it in my head that that was just a crutch, because people called it a disease. I'm like, "Well, I'm not sick. You know, I'm getting around good." So I went to Fountain Correctional. And I'm from the mountains. I'm from the western part of the state, almost into Tennessee. And I lived in such a fantasy world that the reality of the fact that I was going to prison did not sink in until I saw the flatland. And I was just, in my mind, in my sick mind, I just kept thinking, I'm going to wake up, but I'm not going to be in prison, you know. But I went to prison. And at Fountain, I went to one AA meeting. And I went because it was after we were supposed to be in our dorms, and I wanted to be out. You know, so I went to an AA meeting, and that's actually where I first met Amy. And I even shared at that meeting, and it kind of dawned on me, maybe sort of, that I might be an alcoholic. But at the same time, you know, I'm from the mountains. I'm just a good old gal. That's what you do at the end of the day. You drink a cold beer. So I really didn't believe it. I had started praying a little bit to God. I knew all about God and His Son, but I just thought that this God was a big old genie up there that wouldn't grant any of my wishes. And I didn't have any use for Him, and He didn't have any use for me. And I actually told Him that. I was like, "I know I'm not going to be of any use to anybody else. So just do you and me both a favor and just take me on out." So it wasn't long after that I went to Mary Frances, the Mary Frances Center in Tarboro. And prison changed my life. There is no way in the world that I would have ever said, "Thank you, Lord, that I went to prison," but that is the absolute truth. When I got to Mary Frances, they started telling me stuff about myself, stuff that I didn't want to hear and stuff that I didn't think was true. Things like, "You're an alcoholic." Look at your life. I had two DUIs. I've been in and out of jail since I was 17. Finally made it to prison. You know, look at your life. And I'm like, "Yeah, I know. That's why I'm drinking, you know." But they had a lot of volunteers come in and out. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't really want anything to do with Alcoholics Anonymous when I first got to Mary Frances, because I wasn't like you guys. You guys had issues. I was a victim. You know, people had wronged me, and I justifiably drank. One of those other volunteers was actually from a church service, and I was sitting there listening to that, and it dawned on me. I said, "Oh, my goodness, I have two beautiful children I may never see again." At that point, I thought that I was going to do 18 months, no more, no less, in prison. And just how unmanageable my life actually was hit me like a ton of bricks. And they did a little call for people to pray on you and stuff, and I felt this tugging in my heart, and I was like, "Well, I'm not going up there. I know all about you. I'm not going up there." But something in me that I cannot explain pulled me up there. And when I got there, I prayed a prayer that was half angry, half broken, half, that's a lot of halves. But it was just, it was a bunch of different stuff that I cannot explain. And I just told God, this God that I knew absolutely nothing about. I knew He existed. Something in my core being knew that God existed, but I didn't know who He was. I didn't know anything about Him. And I told Him, I'm fed up. You know, You absolutely win because I can't do this anymore. I cannot live my life, and I'm sorry that I ever even tried to do it. Help me. And I gave up. The next week, I saw Alcoholics Anonymous in a whole new light. I saw what it really was, a pathway to this God that I didn't understand, a pathway to this God that I thought was mean and didn't like me. But that's just the way I was. Nobody liked me. Poor me. Nobody likes me, you know. And it's because, you know, I'm a blubbering drunk sitting in the corner. That's why they don't like you, gal. I'm just, you know. I had long since given up, you know, the life of the party. I had graduated into plum misery, squalling, and it was just awful. But these volunteers, Meredith said that, you know, she met me, and she did. Pam did the second chance group on Sunday nights. Deborah and Amy came to a recovery day, and we started writing. And I started writing her because I was still in this thing. I knew AA had something that I was interested in, but I still just didn't know, you know. I wrote Amy so I could tell my counselor, look what I did, you know, I married Frances. And that's how that started, so I could get a gold star by my name. And I did. But then, you know, the more I spent at Mary Frances, the more they dealt with all, they say alcohol, it's just a symptom of all that other icky stuff that you've got inside of you, whatever it is. You know, and I had a lot of that junk inside of me. And once they started showing me and shining some light on that stuff, and once I became willing to let God, you know, come in and get some of that stuff, the stuff you guys were telling me started to make more sense, you know. So I asked Amy, and we corresponded and everything else, and it dawned on me, you might not need to go back home, you know. And I love the mountains, and I love them. And I would never be proud to call myself a flatlander, but I am today. But I'm like, I'm not going home. You know, it's something inside. It's that supernatural power that come from this God that I still didn't really know. But He was there for me and helping me. He's like, let's not go back. So I didn't. And because of Amy being into the center and writing me those letters, I said, well, I like Mary Frances. You know, they really loved me there, and it was good. So I wanted to get into a halfway house near that area. And turns out that Amy, you know, had some connections to a halfway house in Rocky Mount. That was awesome, you know. And I was like, all right. And you know how when you line up with God, there's just something inside of you that knows that you've lined up with God. And all that fear and all that, you know, just kind of, it just goes away. And you feel perfectly at peace with the decision that you've made. And that's what I felt when she handed me that application. Meredith picked me up at my halfway house hours after I had gotten out of prison, took me to my first AA meeting, and I was just tickled to death. You know, I joined the Came to Believe group, and through this follow-up, through this love, through this faithfulness that this program has shown me through those members of that home group, I began to see the characteristics of God. I began to see this loving God that people had told me about, this unconditional love that I'd heard about, but I didn't have a clue what it was. Love to me always costs something. It cost me something, or it cost somebody else something. I didn't understand love that didn't cost anything at all. And that's what got me hooked. A month after I went out of prison, I went to Medoc Mountain. I call it Murdoch because that movie Willow. But it's Medoc Mountain, and Jerry and Paige and Amy, they did this retreat thing. And we did those steps, and we did them in such a way that I couldn't hem-haw about it. I couldn't take my sweet time. I couldn't. It was just me and God and nature and a bunch of other people that knew exactly what I was going through. And I came away from that after working those 12 steps a completely different woman. And I'm still growing, but it's all because of the people that took time out of their lives to come into that prison, that took time out of their lives to help wipe the tears off my face, took time out of their lives to write me letters. You know, if had I not gone to prison, I don't know where I would be. I wanted to die so bad before I came in, and I was dead. I was spiritually dead. I was dead in every sense of the word, except my heart was still beating. And prison absolutely changed my life. Alcoholics Anonymous inside of prison changed my life. And I'm just grateful to be here. I never thought in a million years that somebody would take what I had to say seriously, you know. And it's a blessing. And I'm overwhelmed. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name's Soteros Kokalis, and I'm an alcoholic. Everybody calls me Tony, and Soteros means Terry, so, you know, I'm still trying to figure out what my name is. But, I got sober in 1995 in the Inside Freedom Group of Alcoholics Anonymous at Wayne Correctional. It doesn't matter how I got here, but, you know, with my name from Miami, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out when I got in front of that judge from North Carolina, you know, but he sends me to 50 years in the Department of Corrections. So he said, we'll give you time to think about, you know, what you're doing, them dry goods that you're trafficking, you know, them condiments, what I used to call them. But, you know, an amazing thing happened for me, and it's happening right now. You all are the most beautiful people in the world because, you know, I'm closer to you than I am to anybody in my life. You know, my own family, you all understand me. And what happened for me is in 1989, when I came in with that 50-year sentence, I was scared just like I am now. I mean, I had a lot of fear going on. I mean, it was over for me. My life was over. It was over. When I finally woke up from the fog, and I'm sitting there having to do all this time. And started out at Central Prison in process, and I ended up in Marion, close custody, and they had the treatment center, DART. And I got in there, and an amazing thing happened after about 2 weeks. I'm in there, and they're passing this teddy bear around in group, right? And I'm going. And I'm seeing some scary people up in here, and I'm seeing this big guy in there with this teddy bear dumping out stuff and just, I'm like, you know, I'm starting to feel it, because now I'm thinking about my daughter and my babies. That, you know, I had 4 children, and they were all young. And I started thinking about all this stuff, and oh my God, what have I done? How did I get here? Blah, blah, blah. And what ended up happening through that experience, I honestly didn't have a problem with drinking. But the truth of the matter is I did. And that's what happened for me. The reality, going through treatment and having good treatment providers, getting through that denial and getting me into the truth, me coming to that realization, like it talks about in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, to fully concede to our innermost self that I'm powerless over alcohol. When that happened for me, an amazing thing happened, because I became open-minded. I became willing to start really listening to what was going on in this treatment. And when I got through the treatment, Jim Dunlap said, I think, you know, we need to send you over to Wayne. I think you'd make a good peer counselor. We have this thing, you know, going on in DART and with peer counselors, so on and so forth. And I didn't want to do that. I mean, now I know I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to go to me. I'm all confused now. I don't know what to do, because now I'm fixing to go. I'm scared. You know, I'm really scared. And now I'm seeing, you know, in there that, you know, if you're part of the DART, you're a snitch or this. I just don't know what to do. So I go into the kitchen at Wayne, and I start working in the kitchen at Wayne Correctional in 1989. And then what ends up happening is Steve Mitchell sends a flyer over to the kitchen to send me over to the office at DART to, you know, interview me for a peer counselor position. And the first time I passed on it. I stayed in the kitchen because I got comfortable in the kitchen. I could eat. I could do what I needed to do to survive. I was on survival mode then. So I started showing up at these meetings that they were having over in the Dart area, coming from population. I think there was me and one other guy coming from population. All the rest were the Dart clients, and there wasn't too many people from population coming over to the fellowship. So what ended up happening after about 6 months, Steve sent another flyer over there to come get me over there and interview me. And this time I went ahead and agreed. And I went through this training, and I started meeting some people like Ed, Jerry, Tom, Keith, some powerful people. I'm talking about, I got involved with this peer thing and then started really hearing some stuff, and I started healing quick because I started really, really trusting. I didn't trust anybody. I got sentenced to these years. It was their fault. They snitched on me. They didn't catch me. I was still in denial. But as the process of being truthful and working in the steps, which, they helped me do, an amazing thing happened. When I worked as that peer counselor and I started getting in group therapy and started doing the things and getting involved in the literature and just, I had a lot of time on my hands to help myself get well. And that's what I did. And an amazing thing is all the volunteers that came in, I got to hear my story over and over and over again. And I just started getting comfortable. This is real. I really am an alcoholic. And I really don't have to go back to that way again. And I am free. And a D.A., me and him, I remember when I first fell on the yard and I was walking around the yard with D., I got pulled by some guys. What are you doing walking around the yard? You know what that guy's in here for? And I was over in the Dart side working with him, and we were doing some good work. He was doing some good stuff with me in the fourth step, and good stuff. And I got to like D. When I first heard what the deal was, of course, nothing. But then when I got to meet him and through the treatment and everything, man, principles before personalities, love and tolerance is our code, stuff like that. And I started just being open-minded and willing to not be judgmental and realize that, he's, like it says, pray for a sick person like you would a sick friend. Hell, who am I? I'm sick too. Look at all the things that I did in my past. So, man, I had a love for that guy. And when they pulled me, I said, have you come over to a meeting yet? Because there was a lot of buck, a lot of stuff going on in population, I kept on doing the next right thing. And, I always thought I was going to have a problem, but I didn't. As a matter of fact, it was a solution. More people started, when they started seeing you, when you walk the walk, people start slowly, there might be something to it. They started coming over for the free coffee. But then, some of it sticks. And then it's just amazing. It's just amazing, the miracle that I'm here, sitting here right now. I mean, it is just such an honor, and I am just so blessed to be sober today. My home group is a Sundowners group in Melbourne Beach, Florida. And I look forward to the day when I can go visit Goldsboro again in the Inside Freedom group. And I cannot believe I've just filled out paperwork in Florida to go back into corrections. Now, for me, this is the psychic change. I mean, if my brother were alive or any of the old crowd that I used to run with, which, they're not here with us anymore because of the paths that they chose to live. But for me to be wanting to go back and carry the message of hope inside of a correctional facility, I mean, I thought when I first, the first thing I want to do is run as far as I could run, and I never wanted to look back. But today I'm looking forward to, hearing BJ, share. I mean, it's just such a miracle what happens for us when we get in here and the volunteers to carry this message inside the walls. I mean, it is just such an amazing, amazing thing, to be able to have the hope from a hopeless situation. Because I was hopeless. I was all in. Today, my kids are all grown. I have a relationship. It's not as where I want it to be, but it's getting there. It's getting there. They talked to me today. I can remember reading a letter from my daughter that ripped my heart out when I was at Central Prison the first 3 weeks. saying to me, she was like 14 years old at the time, and it said, Dad, part of me wants to love you because you're my dad, and the other part wants to hate you for putting Mom in the situation you did. And you know, that to me just said, what did I do wrong? I was only trying, you know, to provide a good family for him. I could never see the consequences of my actions before. You know, I didn't think I was hurting anybody. I thought if someone was going to buy the stuff, why not just buy it for me? You know, that was my rationalization. They're going to buy it anyway. And my wife was poor, her family was poor, so I'm like Robin Hood. I'm gonna you know, just go ahead and give them everything they want and put them in good school and do everything, and it doesn't matter if anything happens to me. You know, I can handle it, you know. Well, let me tell you something. I'll tell you what. It ain't no fun when the rabbit's got the gun. You know what I mean? Boy, I'll tell you. You know, the amazing thing about that is I never really, you know, we don't intend to harm people. You know, the tornado, you know, it talks about us in the big book about when we, it looks like the wind stopped blowing, Ma, you know, in the big book with that part. And it's like, I never realized the effect of what it would have. I see it now as my kids are grown. You know, my twins are 34. My daughter's 31, and my oldest is 37, and I see what you know, from me not being around all those years, I can see that emotional, that pain, and it's like they don't even know me, and now they're learning to know me. So this program, and you all have saved my life, and I am forever grateful for that, and I am so just grateful that I was able to come up here and join y'all in this journey, this fellowship, because, you know, Steve, I got to talk with Steve. I haven't talked to Tom, but they gave me a tape this morning at a meeting that I went to at 7:30. Gave me one of Tom's tape, and they said, yeah, he's one of these. He's a good local guy around here. You know, I didn't say that. You know, he helped get me sober because I was late coming here. I wanted to get back here, but. This is a wonderful fellowship, and I just want to thank you all for having me here, and God bless you.
I never thought that four alcoholics would finish early, but it did happen, and everybody did a really good job. I was enjoyed hearing everybody speak. And I guess we have a few extra minutes on our break before the 10:30 meeting starts.